This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We start the weekly news review with WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. He's on the phone. Howard, how are you?
Very good, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. Missed you on the Political Junkie yesterday. Glad you could be with us today. And we've also got with us on the line WVXU reporter Jay Hanselman. Jay, hello.
Hi, Michael.
Glad to hear both of you. I think we're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe we'll all be in the building together, I don't know, sometime in the summer, hopefully anyway. But Jay, I want to start with you because you've got some big news to report from both the city of Cincinnati and Hamilton County as it relates to their finances. We'll start with the county because that's the newest information. What's the situation as it relates to the fiscal impact on the county government and their budget in the midst of this pandemic?
Well, clearly, all local governments are taking a hit because of a decline in revenue. And for Hamilton County, a couple of weeks ago, they had estimated that the shortfall in sales tax revenue and parking fees and property transfer fees would be anywhere in the range of $40 to $60 million. And yesterday, the Hamilton County Commission passed a budget adjustment resolution that essentially trimmed about $40 million from this year's county budget. That's made up of about $22 million in spending reductions, and then they plan to use about $12 million in reserve money, and then they're hoping for about $6 million from state and federal sources to try to balance the $40 million shortfall that they expect right now. Now, that's a snapshot in time. That's what they're expecting right now. Part of the problem for the county, they rely on sales tax revenue, and that's about a three-month delay. So they're not going to have really hard numbers for what's happening in March and April until June or July. So they're taking their best guess right now. Again, this is the first step, and there could be other steps in the summer as they get more hard information. But for now, for the county, they're anticipating about a $40 million shortfall.
And to be clear, we're talking about the current fiscal year.
Correct. For the county, it's the current fiscal year. They are on a calendar year budget from January 1 to December 31. Now, for the city, it's a little bit different because they're on a fiscal year, which ends on June 30th, and then the new one starts on July 1st.
So what is the ultimate impact here? We're talking about dollar figures, but what does it mean for things like employees of the county government?
Well, for the county right now, they've had about 350 county employees who have been furloughed. Some other county employees have taken salary reductions. There are some programs that they were going to start this year that they are now not going to do. They're holding those to save money. Basically, if you look at, there was a spreadsheet that came out yesterday, about 10 pages, and I mean, it's even down to the most detailed of, I think I saw one cut that was like $37.50, up to millions of dollars of cuts, where they've adjusted the budget, you know, for this year.
And so the county is hoping for some federal or state grants to help balance the calendar year budget. The county's already received a significant chunk of change through the Federal CARES Act. You reported $142 million, but that's a complicated contribution. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Right. The Federal CARES Act did include $142 million for Hamilton County. Matter of fact, that's already in the county's bank account. But it can only be used for direct expenses related to the COVID-19 pandemic, which last week the county had estimated that they had spent $4 or $5 million. So that leaves hundreds of millions of dollars sitting in a bank account that they, for right now, really can't use where they need it to replace revenue that the county is losing. The county commission president, Denise Driehaus, has been lobbying federal lawmakers to change that, and so far that has not happened. And lawmakers all over the country are asking for Congress for some relief in the news if there is a second stimulus package coming down the road to help local governments with this income that they're not taking in right now.
And we're talking with WVXU reporter Jay Hanselman. So, Jay, when we talk about applying that $142 million from the CARES Act to expenses directly related to the COVID-19 crisis, what does that mean exactly? Because the county is already projecting a loss in revenue from a lot of general sources that seem to be directly impacted by the stay-at-home order. How do they reconcile this? How do they, I guess, navigate these new waters?
Well, for right now, the $142 million, they're buying things that they know that they can. They've purchased personal protective equipment. for first responders and hospitals and others in the county who need the personal protective equipment. They purchased some equipment for the 911 center. Actually, they showed that off this morning, that they've now allow, instead of all of the 911 dispatchers and operators being in one room, they're actually able to spread out at different places, even I think at a different facility, to take those calls and do those dispatches. So anything that they think that they legally and can defend, they're spending the money on the pandemic, and with their fingers crossed and hoping that eventually either Congress will come through with additional funding, or they'll give them the flexibility to use the funding that they already have in their bank account for where they really need it, and that's to replace lost revenue.
That's right. So just to reiterate then, the money that they're seeing not come in from situations like parking not being utilized, the casino being closed, revenue that they would have otherwise been collected, this money from the federal government so far cannot be calculated to replenish that.
That's correct. And it's very frustrating to county officials that, again, they have this huge pot of money sitting there, but for right now they can't really use it where they would like to.
So the city of Cincinnati, its fiscal year, which starts on July 1, and they're, of course, still concluding the current one, the city is facing some challenges financially as well, and you reported that the projected budget deficit for next year has grown pretty significantly in a very short period of time. What can you tell us?
In 1 month, they started out on April 1st projecting a fiscal 21 budget shortfall of $60 to $80 million. 2 weeks ago, on April the 15th, they projected it to be $81 million. And just this week on Wednesday, the city upped that number to a projected deficit starting July 1 of $91.4 million. And to put that in perspective, we're talking about the general fund. That's what pays for basic city services, police, fire, garbage pickup, taking care of parks and recreation centers. That $91.4 million is approximately a quarter of the total general fund budget that they are now looking to, in a matter of weeks, have to close that $91.4 million deficit. And on top of that, they still have to balance out the rest of this year's budget. 2 weeks ago, that was projected to be a $15 million deficit, and through some cost-cutting and measures, they now have that down to $9 million that they have to close between now and June 30th.
Okay, and so is the situation similar to that at the county, or is it more dire at the city? I know that we've heard Mayor John Cranley urging the federal government to assist cities like Cincinnati, has not received the type of help that he wants. Can you compare the two situations?
Well, right now the city has received limited federal money. So when the CARES Act was passed at the end of March, it made allocations to communities with residents of populations of 500,000 or greater. So Hamilton County was included in that. That's how they got their $142 million. But since Cincinnati's population is less than a half million, they did not receive that direct money. John Cranley is lobbying federal lawmakers for some inclusion in a future stimulus package. And he's also hoping that Hamilton County will get some flexibility with its money, and it may be willing to share with other political jurisdictions in the county, such as Cincinnati and other cities, villages, and townships. And for the next fiscal year, to try to balance that out, at least right now, to close that $91.4 million gap, the city is hoping that there will be $40 million coming from either the state or federal government to assist with that. So that's a major part of their plan to close that deficit, is that they will get some sort of assistance from another government to help them to balance out for the fiscal year that starts on July 1st.
And again, we're talking with WVXU reporter Jay Hanselman here on Cincinnati Edition. We're also joined on the phone by WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Both of you were busy this week on election night. Howard, when we talked on Wednesday, you hadn't been to bed since early Tuesday. Have you gotten some sleep since then?
Yeah, a little bit. We're catching up. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I'm looking forward to the weekend.
I think a lot of us are, even though the days do tend to blend together these days. Right. But when we talked on Wednesday, to recap what happened in the mail-in primary that was rescheduled for Tuesday, some issues were still lingering. We hadn't seen a concession yet in the Hamilton County Commission race, that open seat there in the Democratic primary, where Alicia Reese was ahead of Connie Pillage, two former state representatives vying for that seat. Is the picture in that clearer now?
No, it's not going to be clear for a while, because under Ohio law, they can't really count like the provisional ballots and the ballots that were that the postal service didn't deliver on time until after May 8th, 10 days after the primary. And that's when they start doing an official count. And that's when we'll know for certain who's the winner, who's the loser in this thing. Now, you know, it was a fair margin for Alicia Reese. I suppose it's possible that Connie Pillage could pick up and go ahead in some of, you know, provisional ballots in particular, but I don't know. I think it's kind of a long shot.
So we've got some time to wait still there. What surprised you the most on Tuesday night? You're a longtime political hound here in the city watching things. Was there anything that surprised you on Tuesday outside of the strangeness of the whole thing?
Well, the strangeness was, that was unique in my experience. But as far as the results are concerned, the sheriff's race on the Democratic side between Jim Neal, the incumbent, and Sean McGuffey, challenger who used to work for him, was incredible. Because generally speaking, in politics, an incumbent, an entrenched incumbent, and Neal is that because he's now served two terms as Hamilton County Sheriff. That entrenched incumbent has enormous advantages, usually. And the results, if he or she is running against a first-time candidate, you would expect that they could take 70% of the vote, the incumbent. Well, that didn't happen this time. Actually, the challenger took 70% of the vote, and the incumbent was left with 30% of the vote and was just basically humiliated.
Jay Hanselman, you had to work on election night as well, had a very long night, early morning slash. One of the races that you were paying attention to was the Issue 7 Sorta levy. That was another one that was too close to call as of Wednesday. What's the status of that one? The same situation as the Hamilton County Commission race?
It's probably even closer than the Hamilton County Commission race. The difference between yes and no on Issue 7 is, I believe it was 625 votes. And I'll let Howard weigh in on this, but I think what I know, Issue 7 supporters are cautiously optimistic because they have a lead. But I guess what I would be a little bit concerned about is I think there were more than 4,000 provisional ballots that have to be counted. And typically, most of those end up being counted, and this is the part Howard may be able to clarify. I think those would have just come in on Tuesday, and I think for supporters, what they need to be a little bit worried about is those are people who are voting now with the current financial crisis because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and those provisional ballots may not break the way that supporters of Issue 7 hope that traditionally maybe they would have broke in the past.
Yeah, I think that's true to a large extent, although I think a lot of those people were intended to be Democratic people, African-Americans, Central City people who were casting those provisional ballots. The people who actually cast provisional ballots on Tuesday at the Board of Elections were people who did not get their mail absentee ballot in time, and so they could show up at the Board of Elections and vote a provisional ballot. So after May 8th, Board of Elections has to take every last one of them and make sure that they're valid and that those ballots should be counted. And as Jay says, I think, you know, there's a little more possibility in that race that the election night unofficial result could be flipped. But it's still very hard to do because, you know, my experience is they tend to break the same way that the election night votes break. But see, it is in doubt. And as Jay can tell you, I mean, there's an enormous amount of money and enormous projects that are hanging in the balance on this thing.
So let's just put it out there. What's the definitive date that we think these will be settled once and for all, and people can start to focus on the general? Obviously, the tax levy would be ending, but for the primary races?
That's the question that everybody asks, and everybody wants to know the answer to, but there is none yet.
Okay.
Because they have a certain period of time under Ohio law after that 10-day period where they must conduct the rest of the count. And they have to have the Board of Elections members actually be there and present for this thing, so they have to juggle a lot of schedules. I suspect they're going to do it pretty quickly. I think May 9th would be a Saturday, and there's nothing to prevent them from working over the weekend to count these votes.
And we're talking
and
with...
If I can just jump in.
Sure, Jay, go ahead.
At the end... Howard's right. The first day is May the 9th, and we know that it has to be done by May the 19th. So we'll know the 9th and the 19th.
Yeah, pick one. It just depends on the scheduling and the scheduling of staff and board members and that sort of thing.
And we're talking with Howard Wilkinson and Jay Hanselman from WVXU. Howard, you've got a new column out on WVXU.org, why Trump wants to treat the USPS, the United States Postal Service, like a piece of junk mail. I don't want you to give it all away. We'd like people to go to the website and read your column and weigh in there. But give us the premise of what prompted you to write this.
Well, I think a lot of people have been following this story in the national news media about Donald Trump basically declaring war on the United States Postal Service, saying that they should be charging 4 to 5 times as much, you know, for delivering things like Amazon products or Amazon orders, and you know they're just inefficient and they can't get the job done. Now, if you were a conspiratorial sort, which I'm not, but every once in a while it creeps into my head that there's probably another reason for somebody like Donald Trump to do this. If the U.S. Postal Service does not get the money that it needs from Congress, there is a very real possibility that they would not be in a position in the fall to even be able to deliver absentee ballots to millions and millions of Americans. Donald Trump is saying that the absentee ballots, mail ballots, are a terrible thing. They're an evil thing. They're corrupt and full of fraud. Of course, there's absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever. None. But he says it. And the Democrats are just afraid that he's trying to pull something.
And so outside of the context of the election and the absentee ballots, what do you see as the impact of a diminished or completely deteriorated postal service?
Well, it is, you know, you had some problems with the postal service in this past election, this week's election. I mean, the Ohio Secretary of State had to call the people running the Postal Service in Ohio and say, hey, can you please hurry it up and get these things delivered to people? They asked for them some time ago, and they're waiting 4 or 5 days for things to, you know, a ballot to appear that really could be done overnight because they're just going across town. So we're already seeing those kind of problems and the kind of pressures that the Postal Service is under. And there's a lot of people who are afraid that it could be a very big mess next fall. And there are some people who still want to have an entirely mail-in ballot in November.
And you can read more of Howard's commentary at WVXU.org. Before I let y'all go, Jay, you had a very interesting story this week about trash and cardboard. It seems that because we're all staying at home so much more, there's more garbage somehow and more materials that can be recycled. But what is the Solid Waste District saying?
Well, the Solid Waste District, you're right that people are staying home. They're cleaning out their closets, as I have done. They're cleaning out their basements, and that's leading to more trash, and that's causing some collection workers to have to actually work overtime to pick all that up. But also with people getting more deliveries in cardboard boxes, it's actually holding back recycled cardboard from the paper mills that they need to make new cardboard boxes. So they're encouraging folks that if you have the cardboard boxes and you're done with them, which you should be because the delivery is already there, that you break those down and recycle them as quickly as possible so that your current cardboard box can go back to a paper mill and become a new cardboard box.
Jay, I only asked you about that because I wanted to hear you say trash. Jay Hanselman, Howard Wilkinson, stay safe out there. I look forward to seeing you all in person very soon. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Michael.
Up next, a spike in murders in Cincinnati. The stay-at-home orders may be playing a role, the police chief says. And later we'll have a discussion about the Bengals without Andy Dalton. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.